time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. German Chancellor Angela Merkel swept to a fourth term in elections Sunday, but with a reduced vote total of under 33%, lower than the more than 41% her conservative bloc took in 2013. Ms. Merkel acknowledged the coming weeks will not be easy, but the coalition recognizes, she said, its responsibility to the country. The Social Democrats lost support, taking just over 20% of the vote.
Heute ist ein schwerer und ein bitterer Tag.
SPD leader Martin Schulz called it a difficult and bitter day for German social democracy. One of the biggest developments was how well the rightist Alternative for Germany, or AfD, did, taking 13% of the vote and becoming the first far-right party to win seats in the German parliament in more than 50 years. The German leader will likely need to build a new coalition, perhaps with the pro-business Free Democrat and Greens parties. RMIT European Union professor Bruce Wilson in Australia said Ms. Merkel's biggest challenge now will be keeping such an unlikely coalition together.
The question for Angela Merkel will be how to harness those two parties that will potentially go in divergent directions.
Angela Merkel now joins predecessors Helmut Kohl and Konrad Adenauer as the only post-war chancellor to win four terms. The U.S. Sunday said it carried out half a dozen airstrikes on a suspected Islamic State desert camp in Libya Friday, killing 17 militants. The Pentagon said the camp is located about 240 kilometers southeast of Sirte, a northern coastal city once an IS stronghold. The camp was believed to be used to move IS fighters in and out of the North African country. This is VOA News. The president of the Kurdistan Regional Government in northern Iraq, Masoud Barzani, is urging voters to go to the polls Monday in a referendum on independence from Baghdad. Mr. Barzani said the objective is not immediate independence, but rather to engage Baghdad in a dialogue on eventual secession. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi insisted he will not relinquish the Kurdish people. He said, "We have rejected a racist and sectarian state. Iraq," he said, "will remain for all Iraqis." But James Jeffrey, distinguished fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and a former diplomat to Iraq, said Baghdad, since 2003, has failed to fully integrate its three main religious groups, Shia, Sunni, and Kurd, into a united country.
Unwise as this decision is, risky as it is, there is a feeling that Baghdad doesn't listen to them.
The central government in Baghdad has asked the Kurdish region to hand over control of its border posts and airports and called on other countries to refrain from importing Kurdish oil. Iran announced it has stopped all flights to the Kurdish region. Security forces in Myanmar said they uncovered a mass grave of nearly 30 Hindus in rested western Rakhine State, blaming Rohingya insurgents. Among the dead, 20 females and 8 male children. Ali Riaz, a Southeast Asian analyst at Illinois State University, said it's hard to verify such claims.
That is why what we have been, at least personally I am, in favor of having a fact-finding mission. And it is the Myanmar government which has been stopping this Human Rights Commission's Human Rights Council's effort to send a fact-finding mission.
Violence in Rakhine broke out last month after insurgents attacked security forces, prompting a security crackdown that sparked a mass exodus of Rohingya Muslims to neighboring Bangladesh. More than 400,000 have fled, swelling to over 700,000, the number of refugees Bangladesh is trying to shelter, prompting the UN Refugee Agency to call for massive international assistance. Zimbabwean pastor Ivan Mawariri Sunday was arrested during a church service after posting a video criticizing the country's worsening economic difficulties. His lawyer said he's been charged with subverting a constitutional government. His video posted Saturday showed long lines at fuel stations. Mawariri is due in court Monday to face earlier charges from previous anti-government campaigns. A woman was killed, at least 6 other people, including the pastor, wounded in a shooting at a Nashville, Tennessee church. The suspect, whose identity has not been released, shot and wounded himself before being arrested, a motive unknown. Power outages and fuel and food shortages continue to plague the Caribbean island of Puerto Rico 5 days after being lashed by fierce Hurricane Maria. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 25th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Liberia's Electoral Commission says ballots for the October 10th presidential election are secure.
As usual, ballot papers everywhere in the world, protection is provided by the state. So there's no reason to worry now. Ballots are well secured, and there's no need absolutely to worry about that.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of the Electoral Commission of Liberia. DRC President Joseph Kabila promises credible and peaceful elections, but he won't say when. We will talk with the information minister. There's a unique study in Nigeria about how local norms determine corrupt practices. And Zimbabwe police arrest a pastor and human rights activist for holding anti-government protests.
Ivan was arrested and is facing a charge of subverting a constitutionally elected government. It was emanating from a video that he published yesterday concerning fuel queues and price hikes in the shops.
Harrison Nkomo is the lawyer for Pastor Evan Marareri. Gambian President Adama Barrow credits the diaspora for its contribution to the democratic changes in the Gambia. And Cameroon suspends 30 radio and television journalists for biased reporting. Those stories plus something O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia says ballot papers for the country's October 10th presidential election, which arrived in the country over the weekend, are secure. Jerome Kokoya says there is no reason for Liberians to be concerned. There are 20 presidential candidates in this year's election and 980 candidates for 73 seats in the House of Representatives. Kokoya says ballot papers for the legislative election are expected on September 28.
As usual, when we receive these sensitive electoral materials, they are placed under the protection of state security, and that's what we've done in this case. So they are very, very secure.
People say, well, what's the order of the names on the ballot? Could you explain why certain names are placed at the top and others are placed at the middle or in the bottom?
It's simply alphabetical order. That's all it is. Your name starts with a body, and B is the the first last name. And that's why we come first. And that's simply that. Alphabetical order. The names are arranged in alphabetical order. No other standard condition.
So what do you say to those who might think that certain names are placed where they are because of favoritism?
No, absolutely no favoritism. It's just based on, like I said, alphabetical order, a first letter price. That's all it is.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, I was in Liberia a week ago, and I thought there was a case, perhaps in the Supreme Court. Do you expect any of the candidates to be disqualified before Election Day?
No, for now, I don't have any reason, no evidence to think so, because as a matter of fact, all of the cases that emanated from the nomination exercise have all been disposed by the Election Commission and the Supreme Court. I don't see any opportunity for new objection at this point. Except after the election.
I was in Liberia and talking to some of the journalists, particularly those who came from the rural area, was the idea, what I thought I was hearing from some of them was the concern for inaccessibility of certain voting centers, particularly people in the rural areas who are traveling from the various towns to come to vote on voting day. What can you tell us about accessibility to these voting centers?
We have 2,080 precincts in Liberia. Those 2,080 precincts are broken down into 5,390 polling places. As I speak to you, I have no report that any of those places have been inaccessible. What I do know is that the general rural conditions to some part of the country, like, for example, the southeastern part of the country, sometimes there are difficulties getting there. But when they talk about inaccessibility, I don't think it's for the ordinary voter. Because there are people who live in these communities, they are there. They're talking about maybe movement of materials from Monrovia to those areas. For that, we already have that under control. The United Nations have graciously agreed to provide air support to get our materials to those hard-to-reach areas.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila says his country is on track to hold what he calls credible, transparent, and peaceful election, but he would not say when. In a speech on Saturday to the UN General Assembly, Kabila said his country will not condone what he called foreign dictates. A December 31, 2016 agreement reached with the opposition calls for elections to be held before the end of this year. Information Minister Lambert Mende says under Congolese constitution, only the Elections Commission can determine when elections can be held, not the president.
I'm not able to say when it will happen, and the president is not able to say it because it is not his duty. We have a constitution. Only the Electoral Commission will tell us exactly when it will happen, but the process is irreversible. We shall have very soon elections. The good news is that we are now at the end of the enrollment of electors, and that these can be a signal that very soon elections will be held.
In the meantime, Mr. Minister, 2017 is almost coming to an end. That means if you calculate the months, then the election may not be held this year.
That is not a problem that can destabilize the country, because the argument of December 31st told us that the elections will be organized before the end of this year. But if there is any problem, the government, the Electoral Commission, and a body that was created by those negotiators to follow up the agreement we meet to discuss and take any measures so that a new date can be set up. So we are still within the agreement of 31st December.
What does the president mean when he said that the DRC is facing some logistical and security challenges? He's appealing for help in these two areas. What are the logistical challenges?
The president said that despite the logistic change we are facing, we face it with a lot of will to organize elections. And those who are real friends of our country can help. You want to help, you come in to help, but don't come hoping that you will dictate us anything.
The crisis in the Kasai region, your president seems to be framing this as a fight against terrorism, although you know your country has been, your government has been criticized for violation of human rights in that area as you fight the so-called terrorism.
We know from where these accusations came. I would not like to elaborate again. We know that we are having people who are for to transform the situation of Congo because they want to recolonize the Congo, and we are choosing Congo to be recolonized.
Lambert Mende, Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. A unique study is underway in Nigeria on how local norms determine corrupt practices and, if possible, to shift those norms. The research is being conducted via road shows all over Nigeria. It focuses on not judging corruption, but rather understanding how it fits into societal norms. Chatham House Africa Program Associate Fellow Lena Kone Hoffman is leading the research. She talked to Ricky Stryak about their ongoing findings.
A novel thing about the research we did is that for the first time we tested or studied corruption in Nigeria, not purely from the perspective of it being wrong or bad, but really trying to understand what people thought about corruption and really just assessed it as a social phenomenon. We just measured it as, you know, something that happens and trying to understand what people think about it and what they think, more importantly, what they think other people do. So we respond to those kinds of cues. So it's really important to understand what people thought other people thought about corruption.
What were some of the more interesting things you heard that you maybe didn't expect or surprised you?
The road side of things, just really having those conversations with different kinds of people who have been in the trenches for a long time doing work on anti-corruption, people who work in anti-corruption agencies, and really trying to connect them to this kind of a new understanding of how we can deal with corruption in Nigeria and ways in which we can develop complementary social change approaches to reducing corruption in Nigeria. So I think most of the interesting conversations we had was really trying to communicate this new approach to understanding corruption.
According to a national survey, the adults mostly pay bribes to police officers. Did you talk to, for instance, police officers, and did they give you any interesting feedback about corruption?
Yeah, we did present the findings. We had police officers attending many of our launches, and we were able to present the findings at the Ministry of Interior in the capital, Abuja. So we presented it to the minister and a number of his service chiefs who were in the room. And what we try to do in presenting the data and presenting the findings, and is really sensitive, you really do have to be careful the ways in which you present data on police corruption, just because you do want to have the right response and you do want them to engage with the data and try and understand it from the perspective of what do we do to change these practices if these are indeed the ways in which police officers behave on a day-to-day basis. So some of the important findings that came out of the study are that social norms do exist around corruption specific to bribery, but they really exist within particular kinds of context. So the overall finding that came out of that is that social norms of corruption are actually limited to specific sectors and practices. And the example of law enforcement and bribery was really a strong one that came out.
Lena Coney Hoffman is Chatham House Africa Program Associate Fellow. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Luxembourg. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and today is Monday, September 25th. Let's send a shout-out to the wonderful journalists we met this month in Monrovia during VOA's Liberia election coverage workshop. Keep up the good work. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Gambian President Adama Barrow says Gambians in the diaspora have made a significant contribution towards the country's recent democratic changes, including his own election. Mr. Barrow made the remarks over the weekend during a town hall meeting in New York. He said his government will ensure that foreign remittances fees are affordable so that more money can trickle into the country. As Pandere Umbai reports, President Barrow also encouraged Gambians to come home and invest.
Gambians from all walks of life on Saturday converged in New York City to welcome their President Adama Barrow at a town hall meeting held at the Harry Tubman Learning Center. In his speech, President Barrow praised the Gambian diaspora community for their contribution to national development.
On behalf of the government and the people of the Gambia, and indeed on my own behalf, I express gratitude to you for your continued and enormous contribution to national development.
Foreign remittances account for the greater chunk of Gambia's gross domestic product. Millions of dollars are remitted to the Gambia from the diaspora each year. President Barrow talks about plans by his government to reduce the cost of remittances from the diaspora to the Gambia.
Launching of an initiative by Central Bank of the Gambia and partners to reduce the transaction cost of remittances to the minimal level possible.
For his part, Foreign Minister Osei Dabo recalled when he met President Adama Barrow shortly after he was freed from jail. Mr. Dabo describes his encounter with President Barrow.
And I said, Adama, you are the Moses of the Gambia. Gambians were like the people of Israel, tormented by their ruler, harassed, and the worst things were meted out to them by their ruler. Gambia was similarly in such a situation, tormented, Gambians brutalized, incarcerated, murdered, made to steal under their ruler, Yahya Jammeh.
Mr. Dabo said without the collective unification of Gambians to vote Jammeh out of power, he would have still been languishing in jail. He commended the diaspora for their contribution towards Gambia's political liberation. American civil rights activist Jesse Jackson was among the recipients of an award for his contribution towards Gambia's democratic struggle. Reverend Jackson facilitated the release of two Gambian Americans, Amor Sacred Jane and Tamsir Jase, who were jailed on treason-related charges during Jammeh's rule. Mr. Jackson comments on the trials and tribulations of the Gambian struggle to democratic rule.
No place, no check, and
President Adama Barrow came to power in December of 2016 after defeating Gambia's longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Barrow has promised to establish a link between his government and Gambians living in the diaspora in the spirit of national development. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
Zimbabwe police have arrested activist and pastor Evan Mawarire for broadcasting a message on social media calling for Zimbabweans to demonstrate against the current shortage of fuel and the sudden price hikes of commodities in shops. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
As he was leading a church service Sunday, Zimbabwe police were waiting for a van outside. The leader of his generation church had broadcast a video Saturday calling for Zimbabweans to protest against fuel shortages and recent price increases of most commodities. Attorney Harrison Nkomo of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing the clergyman who is also the leader of hashtag This Flag Movement that last year led several anti-government protests.
Ivan was arrested and is facing a charge of subverting a constitutionally elected government. It was emanating from a video that he published yesterday concerning fuel queues and price hikes in the shops.
Pastor Mawarire is expected to appear in court Monday. Saturday, the U.S. government issued a statement asking Harare to allow a fair trial for Mawarire, who is facing a separate charge of trying to subvert President Robert Mugabe's government. Mawarire was defiant before he was arrested Sunday.
Zimbabwe, God loves you. Zimbabwe, you will be free. That there is no bondage or oppression that will hold you back. We don't fear anybody.
They're outside here.
They're waiting. I will not be afraid. I will not be afraid. I will not be put into fear. I'll go outside now and let's see where this will lead us. I don't know what will happen.
In Zimbabwe, the charge of trying to topple the president carries a 20-year prison term. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Cameroon's National Communication Council, the government media regulator, has suspended 30 journalists or radio and TV programs for what it calls biased reporting. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Among the more than 30 media organizations and journalists Cameroon's National Communication Council has suspended or warned are newspapers La Nouvelle Expression, La Meteo, L'Anecdote and the capital city radio station Amplitude FM. NCC President Peter Esoka says the media organizations and journalists were suspended from 1 to 6 months because of unprofessional conduct and refusal to respect norms and ethics of journalism.
When a journalist comes up with a newspaper article and says a certain minister is known to be running with the prime minister's wife, how do you take that? It's indecent. It is indecent. And then he lists out who this minister is sleeping with this other minister. How does that help the society? Doesn't. In any way, the media are supposed to play a very, very important role in its development. But then when we take on trivial things and say rubbish about lots and lots and lots and lots of things, it hurts the heart.
Ministers, directors general, a lawmaker, and a former army general had written to the NCC complaining their rights were abused by the journalists' reports. But journalist and IPS correspondent Mbom Sixtus says since its creation, the NCC has been used as a tool to punish journalists.
I have the impression that the National Communication Council was created to serve government officials and influential citizens. The Communication Council will hardly prove a minister wrong. So I don't think the council was created to regulate or bring order to the practice of the profession of journalism in Cameroon.
Cameroon is ranked 126th out of 180 countries in Reporters Without Borders 2016 World Press Freedom Index. Last week, the U.S.-based Committee to Protect Journalists reported Cameroon has been using its 2014 anti-terror law to silence critics and suppress dissent. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the Berlin Marathon, which took place on Sunday as Kenya claimed double gold after Eliud Kipchoge and Gladys Cherono won the men's and women's race, respectively. Kipchoge braved wet conditions on Sunday to cross the finish line at Berlin's Brandenburg Gate in 2 hours, 3 minutes, 32 seconds, missing out on the world record by 35 seconds. Guyo Andola of Ethiopia finished second with a time of 2 hours, 3 minutes, 46 seconds, while Musinet Geremio of Ethiopia was third in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 9 seconds. Olympic 5,000 and 10,000 meters champion Kenenisa Bekele fell off the leading park just after the halfway mark. Kenenisa explains why he pulled out of the race.
The problem was, you know, too much raining and, you know, the ground was very wet, not comfortable, just, you know, the shoes cannot grab in the road, so maintain the pace, you know, losing more energy to keep the pace, so was difficult.
And now to football news. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, this past weekend officially stripped Kenya of the rights to host the 2018 African Nations Championship, CHAN, after an executive committee meeting in Accra, Ghana, on Saturday evening. Addressing the press in Accra on Saturday, CAF President Ahmed Ahmed said that the current political situation in the country was not found conducive for the games. CAF First Vice President Kwesi Nyatake said only countries with existing stadia can now bid to host CHAN 2018.
Those who are putting bids are not going to be persons who are now coming to tell you we are constructing stadia or we are improving hotel facilities. No, it will be considered solely on the basis of those who have existing infrastructure in place.
In the CAF Champions League, defending champions Mamelodi Sundowns were dumped out of the CAF Champions League after losing 3-2 on penalties to Moroccan side Wydad Casablanca in raids on Saturday. Wydad will now meet USM Alger in the semi-finals after the Algerian side edged past Mozambique outfit Ferroviario Biera on the away goals rules. Eight-time winners Al Ahly eased into the semi-finals with a 2-1 away victory over Tunisian side Esperance that gave them a 4-3 aggregate success. Staying with football, Ghana is now the new champions of the West African Football Union Cup of Nations. The Black Stars thrashed Nigeria's home-based Super Eagles 4-1 in the final match of the regional competition played on Sunday. In another regional competition, this time around in Southern Africa, South African women's national football team Bayana Bayana were crowned champions of the 2017 Women's COSAFA Championships after beating host nation Zimbabwe 2-1 at Barbour Field Stadium in Bulawayo City on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sport this Monday morning. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, September 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a nice day today.